totally football show. Crying kids at Wembley, look awesome. Look what you've done. TFS asks, from Thierry Henry to Thierry Herbert, has the club's decline gone on long enough? And while City take a Carabao with Pep's first trophy, just how Arsenal will it be when the Gunners choose Thursday's largely abstract league meeting to put in a real performance? Elsewhere, there's top four what for, Dele Alli on the floor, Pardew heading out the door, and more. Plus, the latest from abroad in your Totally Football Show. Hello, listeners on board today. We've got Matt Davis. Listeners, you recall Matt was the commentator for Chelsea TV and TalkSport. Also, if you're listening in Nigeria, he is the voice of your Argentine football.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Looking good for Boca Juniors at the moment.
Is it?
Yes.
Anything special we should know about that?
Carlos Tevez came back. I would say ridiculously overweight, but it doesn't seem to be hindering him too much. Yeah, he's gone straight back into the team and he scored. So he's back from what he called his holiday in China.
That's lovely. Also here with us today, we've got Ian Irving from Premier League TV.
Hello, James.
So it's going to be a hard-hitting show. We've got the in-house guy from the Premier League, the in-house guy from from Chelsea TV. Hello to you, though, by the way, Ian.
Hello.
Well done for getting down here so smoothly.
Yeah, there was reports of doom in terms of the weather.
Well, snow.
Yeah, I didn't even see a snowflake until I got here, James.
So. Oh, you certainly saw some when you walked in the studio, didn't you?
Hey, no comment.
All right, then. Duncan Alexander.
Hello.
All right, Duncan. Going to be coming to you, and going to be coming to you big, because our first topic is Carabao Cup magic. Mm. And you were there.
I was there, yeah. Your son. He's an Arsenal fan. He says he's an Arsenal fan. So I thought I'd take him.
Is he still an Arsenal fan?
Yeah, he didn't seem that bothered, really. He wanted to see the trophy presentation. So, and then, you know, I kind of envy eight-year-olds their experience of football because it is a more pure and innocent way. But, I mean,
for so many of us, the Sunday's scenes were marked by, I think, around an eight-year-old who was just in tears, gutted.
Yeah, he took it worse than my son, yeah. But it was quite strange being in around the Arsenal fans as they experienced that game in real time, because when the third goal went in, basically half the Arsenal fans just got up and left. And then there was a strange kind of period where every time Arsenal misplaced a pass after that, three or four more people, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and they'd just stand up angrily and storm out. And it was, you know, by the end, there was only about eight people left. So, yeah.
What was it actually like to be amongst the Arsenal fans when a match like that happened?
You felt like you were intruding on a sort of family, you know, funeral almost. It was just, there was so much anger, and it was almost, you know, that everyone had paid a lot of money, obviously, to go to the cup final, but the, you know, just under the surface, they were so ready to go, right, that's it, Wenger's got to go, it's terrible. And yeah, as you saw, they'd pretty much all gone by the final whistle.
Was it like a resignation to it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Aubameyang had that good chance really early on. If that had gone in, I think it would have been different. But after that, you know, City took the lead from a particularly bad bit of play from Arsenal. And everyone after that was just, you know, full of dismay. I mean, it's very strange. I think everyone, whatever club you support, everyone knows clubs when they go through that period when you just, you know, you're so disillusioned. But it was just, I've never really seen it in a cup final before. You know, Normally a cup final's a time for celebration. And, you know, even if you lose, you're like, oh, well, you know, these things happen. But it was just, everyone was just distraught, really.
Mm. Do you know, one of the things that's really interesting when you first start working and going around these grounds and to the different clubs, it's experiencing how fans experience defeats or victories and the different ways in which the clubs sort of show themselves in terms of the characteristics of the fans. What's it like for a defeat at Everton compared to a defeat at Manchester City? What's it like for a victory at, you know, Leicester or wherever it is? And there is little differences between them all. And the Arsenal sort of embody a lot about, you know, the despair of even a cup final experience.
Well, there's also times when there is a silver lining, even if you won't admit it, about a defeat, because you feel that it may be moves on. You talk about resignation in the stands,
yeah,
but towards another kind of resignation.
Yeah, well, one guy, as he brushed past me and called me a better fan than him, although I didn't have the heart to point out that I wasn't actually a fan, but he said, nothing will change, this has happened, you know, and that, I think that's the issue, is that they've seen it many, many times,
right.
And it just feels like it's Groundhog Day.
Okay, it's hard not to make this chat about Man City's biggest ever cup win, about Arsenal. But let's quickly say some good things about City, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been a strange experience for their players because they didn't really have to get out of third gear particularly. But even that said, I thought the third goal from David Silva was just beautiful. It was, you know, typical David Silva, and would have taken a heart of stone not to love Vincent Kompany's goal and the celebration. You could obviously see what it meant to him, and it felt like maybe that's quite convenient for Pep in that he can say, well, you know, company's had his moment this season as well, and then we begin to maybe not get rid of him because he's obviously a hugely influential figure around the club, but he can start to transition into, you know, he's there for his influence off the pitch as much as he is on the pitch kind of thing. But that was lovely for him, and a kind of reward for how often you see players keep trying to come back from injuries, and normally the story is they never do, isn't it? Yeah. And you know, he might not play again, but at least he's got that memory to take from, you know, all those hours and weeks and months of rehab that he was doing.
Well, absolutely. Daniel's story in his 16 conclusions on Football 365, suggesting that he's had 41 separate injuries since joining City, Vincent Kompany. Remarkable. Among the many worrying aspects of this game for Arsenal fans, how big a red light on the dashboard was Vincent Kompany effectively policing Aubameyang?
That is a big worry, isn't it? Because, Aubameyang looked miles behind the rest of the team, or the gap between him and the rest of the Arsenal midfield was ginormous. But yeah, even when there was a straight race at one point between Kompany and Aubameyang, wasn't there? And you would not have thought that Aubameyang would have won that. And as Daniel said in his, his 16 conclusions, if Aubameyang's lost his pace or is losing his pace, then that's half of his effectiveness gone. Obviously, there's a reason that he's gone to Arsenal and not a bigger club, and maybe that sort of plays into that. But it's not the biggest problem that Arsenal have got.
Wow, there's a reason he's gone to Arsenal and not a bigger club, says the man from Chelsea TV. Shocking.
He was very isolated from the rest of the team. And Ozil was getting a bit of stick from the crowd. But again, there were many times he was picking up the ball and there wasn't no options. You know, it was just a very disjointed display all round.
It's early days for Aubameyang as well, isn't it? It is early days. He's only been in English football for a few weeks. It's obviously a cup final. It's a big occasion. You're looking at him up against someone like Vincent Kompany, who perhaps, you know, you'd expect his pace to not be quite there. But, you know, the one thing about Kompany, even with all these injuries, he still manages to produce these sort of performances. He is a big occasion player. He's a big character as well. And the last thing that Kompany would have wanted was to go into that match and not give as good an account of himself as he possibly could. Mm. And to be fair, even with 40-odd injuries he's had, when he has been fit, when he has played, he's still been very, very good at times.
Was criticism of Arsenal players harsh or spot on? I personally think it was accurate, says Ravin. I'm relieved that Ramsey's finally being openly criticised. He mentioned Xhaka as well. And, of course, Mustafi for the opening goal,
yeah,
Duncan.
It was quite strange. So obviously, City did that thing where they play goal kicks really short. And I think Arsenal almost got... They were so concentrating on pressing up against City's defence, they basically left a massive hole down the middle, which you don't see many goals like that at the top level.
It's extraordinary, though, to see him just stop and kind of... Yeah. Appeal to the referee while Sergio Aguero raced off downfield with the ball.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Aguero had not a very good record in cup finals in terms of goal scoring, but a very good record against Arsenal. Mm. And it was like, which one will win out? And it was pretty obvious which one was going to win out.
Was that his first goal in 9 cup finals? Is that
something
right?
Like that, yeah,
it was. Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it, for a player of his quality?
It is. As amazing as Duncan saying something like that. The man from Opta.
Yeah, well, because I'll tell you why I said that was because sometimes you get like super cups and then people, you know, what is a final?
Fair enough.
Is everything a final?
Do you have in a sense, I suppose it is.
But with Mustafi, it's curious that he was playing in this match, because if you think back to the start of the season, Arsenal were trying to offload him, weren't they? And they started this game with him and Callum Chambers. Callum Chambers having had a rotten time against Ostersunds on Thursday. And you think, OK, you're going up against the team that scored more goals than anybody else. It just sort of highlighted, obviously, Liverpool's been more the willful ignorance of defence story throughout the season. But Arsenal have signed all these fantastic attacking players, but they were left with Mustafi and Chambers trying to deal with Sergio Aguero.
Granit Xhaka was particularly poor. I mean, Arsenal didn't have a shot on target after the 23rd minute. They had 2 shots in the whole of the second half. It was just, you know, as the cup finals go, it was abject.
There was nothing about it which looked like a cup final performance.
No.
I thought he would have changed it quicker, Wenger, as well. You sort of looked at the situation in the second half and you had those 3 centre-halves who were more or less going up against Aguero directly. Obviously, there was other players coming into it and so on. But it sort of seemed an opportunity maybe to move to a 4 at the back a bit quicker to try and get back into the game would have been the way forward. But Wenger just waited, and I think Danny Welbeck was actually waiting to come on more or less as the game finished.
5 minutes.
Yeah, as the game sort of finished in terms of a contest. So, yeah, maybe looking back at that, Wenger would have perhaps acted quicker, possibly.
But there was that quote from Wenger at the end when he complained to the fourth official about there only being 3 minutes of added time, and apparently the fourth official said, why do you want more time? So
he's just used to asking for more time, I think. That's the problem.
City, obviously, are a pretty special team, but does this represent a new nadir for Arsene Wenger?
Well, until the next one, I guess.
It's strange that he's won the League Cup, isn't it? That's it, because that would have been one thing that he could have used to save himself at the end of the
really?
Season.
I mean, he's a man who's won
to an extent, you know, he could have said, well, I've completed the set of English domestic trophies, which is not something to be sniffed at, but it's been such a bad week for that and them drawing AC Milan. It could unravel very quickly.
Well, it's a very interesting point, Matt, actually, because there's been a lot of... They are... How many points? They're 10 points off the top four, Arsenal, but never mind, they can get into the Champions League by winning the Europa League. That draw is going to be really interesting. Milan on Sunday night were really slicing their way through Roma's back line, and Roma have a proper... I mean, they know how to defend. If they can do that to Roma, what are they going to do to Arsenal?
It's not just AC Milan. The Europa League, to me, looks a lot stronger at this stage than it did last season. So you always felt from sort of quarterfinals onwards that Manchester United were heavy favourites to win it. But you've got, obviously, Atletico Madrid, a lot of other good teams in there as well. I wouldn't make Arsenal even second or third favourites, probably. So, they've got to put all their eggs in that basket because they're not going to finish in the top four. But it's looking like a second season outside the Champions League.
Well, probably. The fight back begins, of course, this Thursday when they take on Man City again. Mr. Podge asking the key question, will Arsenal go on a run now that all the pressure of winning anything is off? What do you think?
I'm going with no.
Apparently, is there some doubt about Fernandinho and how much he's going to be present in the next couple of weeks? He went off clutching a hamstring?
That's a massive worry, that, for Manchester City. And I'm sure the biggest concern on Pep Guardiola's mind, because he is like this, he'll quickly forget about the fact they've won a trophy and very, very quickly think about the problem with Fernandinho, because for me, he's probably their most important player.
Mm. He's certainly the hardest to replace from that squad.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's not the most talented, maybe he's certainly not the most celebrated, but in terms of the role that he plays in that system for Guardiola, he is probably their most important player tactically.
You say that'll be Pep's biggest concern, but I'm going to suggest probably the second biggest concern, right behind... Okay. All the people who have no freedom, Pep sending a message to the FA over that yellow ribbon business. I have empathy for the people who have no freedom, he says. Before being a football manager, I am a human being, and this is for humanity. To what extent, and I know this is not strictly a football question, to what extent does that sit unhappily with his continued involvement on a commercial level with Qatar? Totally football show, asking the questions that matter. Now, time for an advert.
You can't buy success, unless that is, you're backed by petrobillions. Just ask PSG and Man City. Well, Paddy Power have spent the big bucks buying the best tech brains to make their app better and faster than ever. Check it out for yourself by downloading it for free on Android and iPhone now. 18 plus only, begambleaware.org.
Duncan, as Oily Sailor of Opta fame, I imagine you've got some pretty special stats about the weekend's action.
The beauty of stats is that they apply to every game in equal measure, so I'll be bringing them in as and when we discuss the fine fare that we saw in the Premier League this weekend.
Looking forward to getting statological with you as the show progresses. Nice. Top four race. Here's a stat. Someone big is going to miss out because 6 into 4 does not go. Arsenal, 10 points off the kind of magic quartet. Chelsea now in 5th place. 2 of the Champions League spots after the game at Old Trafford, which you were at, Ian.
Yes.
Yeah. And you were watching as well, weren't you, Matt?
Yes, I was.
Trying to put a positive spin on things.
I can do that.
For the kind of Chelsea Pravda broadcast.
Yeah, I can do that for the first half. Maybe not so much for the second half. Chelsea were really, really good in the first half. Willian is in amazing form at the moment. Terrific finish. I love the fact that he looked up, saw that it was difficult to square it for Morata, and so just smashed it past De Gea, backed himself to beat arguably the best goalkeeper in the world at the moment at his near post. Great. Victor Moses has been better for Chelsea in recent months, which has allowed them to sort of switch the play around a little bit more and send sort of left to right balls, which was working for them a lot last season. But then it all fell apart in the second half, unfortunately.
Why? Ian?
I think United were better. Confused is probably a bit too much, but they sort of took a little bit of time, it felt, to work their way into this system that Mourinho had come up with for this game. He very deliberately didn't use five at the back. Maybe that was due to the fact that Bailly wasn't fully fit and the likes of Rojo and Jones were unavailable.
So was it 4-3-3 again?
Not really, no. He sort of played like a... I think he called it a midfield square. So it was like 4-2-2-2 almost. I don't even think that's correct, but it's certainly closer to it than 4-3-3. Crucial to it were Matic and McTominay. And I have to say, that's probably Nemanja Matic's best game in a Manchester United shirt. The purpose that he played with, he looked like a player who'd left Chelsea at the end of last season. But Scott McTominay, I mean, he's under so much scrutiny at the moment. He's been sort of dragged into the Paul Pogba situation at United because of being selected in Spain in the Champions League in the week when Pogba wasn't from the start. But I think yesterday we had a view of what Jose Mourinho sees in McTominay, because in the press conference on Friday, he was very, very clear that he saw a player that can be developed in Scott McTominay, and he saw very sort of specific qualities that he believed were in McTominay. And what better way to show that than being given a job to man mark one of the best players in Europe, and that player is taken off with 20 minutes of the match still remaining. I mean, he just did a fantastic job.
The move to take off Eden Hazard received a lot of criticism. A lot of people feeling that this was a real win for Mourinho over Conte, but also, I guess, the fact that it was a proper victory in a match against a top six side.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Hazard is one of the most substituted players in the Premier League this season, so it's not a massive surprise that he came off, although he was playing well in the game. I think the big issue, obviously, for Chelsea was Alvaro Morata, who could have had a much different afternoon if his shot in the first couple of minutes had gone in off the bar rather than off the bar. But he is somebody who I think would have benefited massively from having a season of training with John Terry every day. And John Terry would have just kicked him about and bumped him and said, this is what's going to happen to you in the Premier League. Because he's still, in late February, getting kicked, going down, looking at the ref and throwing his arms out, and sort of like the penny's not dropped yet. In a similar way to Didier Drogba in his first season at Chelsea, and he went on to become one of the best players in the club's history, so I wouldn't write him off. And obviously he's had an injury. One of his friends passed away, unfortunately. He's had a bit of time off because of that. So it's been a difficult first season for him. But I do just think that the influence of Terry on Morata could have helped him
Who can just kick Morata a bit?
Yeah, I mean, there could be. Gary Cahill might do that. But without wishing to sound like the cheerleader of his fan club, John Terry was
good
at Chelsea, and he was good at kicking people, yes.
Yeah.
And he would have done that. And what he also did very well as kick people was he always made a big effort as the club captain to integrate foreign players into the environment at the club.
Did he?
Yeah, very, very big on that. So that might have helped as well. But I do just think, you know, the street smarts, and he could have said to Morata, look, I did this to Drogba and look what happened to him. There's your test case.
So, okay, here's a question from Paul McIntosh, who says, if Man United had signed Morata in the summer and Chelsea had subsequently bought Lukaku, would it have made any difference whatsoever to the season each side has had? You're saying, though, because I think a lot of people feel that, swap the two around, Chelsea would be flying. You're saying, though, that Morata is going to come good.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think he, on his day, he's better holding the ball up than Lukaku is, and he's better at linking the play. Lukaku comes alive in the penalty area. Obviously, he's much quicker than Morata is, but I think Morata is better suited to the system that Conte wanted to play. And though Chelsea obviously were linked with Lukaku as well, Conte made a big play for Morata, having come close to working with him at Juventus, but not quite getting there. He always wanted to. So obviously, he struggled a bit, but I think next season we'll see whether he's going to be a hit or a miss.
Okay.
I was surprised at Morata's selection. Sort of working at the game, occasionally you get sort of whispers about what teams will be and what sort of tactics managers will employ before the official announcement. And there were whispers that Morata was going to play. And quite a few of us were quite surprised by that. We were sort of doubting the whispers, because Chelsea played so well against Barcelona without a recognised centre-forward. Olivier Giroud as well, actually, has played a lot, hasn't he, in recent weeks and done okay. And actually, I think he scored at Old Trafford last season. He's had decent matches against United in the past. So I was surprised that he went with Morata. Early on, it looked like a masterstroke. Certainly, if that early chance had gone in, like you say, maybe it would have been different. But as the match went on, his sort of influence did sort of slide. It's interesting, actually, because I remember sitting on a sun lounger last summer on my summer holidays and reading about...
Where were you, Ian?
I was on my honeymoon, actually. I was in the Maldives.
In the Maldives?
Yeah.
So you're there with your you know, freshly wedded bride in the Maldives. And what are you thinking about?
Well, I think she may have been sort of having a snooze at this point, or perhaps had popped off to get
What's passing through Ian Irving's mind?
To get a drink. So I'd had a chance to be able to pick my mobile phone up and check the football news. So I remember reading about Romelu Lukaku signing for United, Morata signing for Chelsea, and Lacazette signing for Arsenal, and all the immediate comparisons there were. This was a very quick look, of course. It was just as long as it took her to get a pina colada and come back. She doesn't drink pina coladas. I don't even know why I said that, but anyway. Do they even have pina coladas in the Maldives? I don't know. It's more of a Caribbean thing. I've gone way off track. But yeah, the comparison the comparison between the three of them.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look at that now, I think Lukaku at the time had quite a bad press. But if you look at it now, I think he has been easily the best signing of the three. He scored twice as many goals as the other two.
Yeah, although that goal yesterday was his first against the top 8 team this season. So,
and
that has been something that's been, you know, levelled at him throughout his career, is that he is very good against the, you know, the smaller teams.
But he stepped up to Manchester United, and the major issue that United had from last season was the fact that they couldn't see off these teams who wouldn't be in the bracket that Lukaku doesn't score against.
And the fact that United are second, it, you know, indicates that they are picking up the points where they're, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And he's scored, what, 22 goals now? I mean, he's on course to get 30+ in his first season at Old Trafford, which, you know, is pretty good, isn't it?
By
and
contrast.
He's 24. You always forget that with the Lukaku, because he's been around for so long. So he's not. He's maybe 3 years off his peak.
I don't think he's a finished product at all. Don't get me wrong. I'm not his biggest fan by any stretch. I just think that there's a lot of intense scrutiny on Manchester United, whether it's people like McTominay coming into the team, whether it's Pogba's performances, Lukaku, Mourinho, whatever it is, there does seem an extreme and an intensity to the scrutiny on Manchester United. And I do feel like at times Lukaku gets the brunt of that. I totally understand Duncan's point about not scoring against the top teams. That's definitely something that needs to be improved. Yesterday was only the start of addressing that, really. But, you know, if he does get to the point where he scored 30-plus goals, Manchester United finished second as a product of those goals to a degree, I think that's OK for a first season.
Fair enough. Here's a stat for you, Duncan. Morata has received more yellow cards than goals and assists since October, start of October.
Mm.
He's had 9 yellows.
Descent.
And
he loves a bit of descent.
Goals or assists.
But the descent comes from him not accepting what is a foul and what isn't a foul, because most of those yellow cards come from him being kicked and moaning to the ref about it.
Matt, Man United are second. Chelsea very much aren't. How worried are you about their Champions League place prospects?
I am fairly concerned because Chelsea have been in and out of form, and Tottenham look really good and Liverpool look excellent, and Man United you always fancy to grind out a result. Chelsea have got Spurs and Liverpool at home in the run-in. Liverpool's their penultimate game of the season. It might well come down to what happens in those matches. Obviously they've got a fantastic record against Spurs at Stamford Bridge. They might need to win both those two games in order to make the top four. It might be as much about taking points off rivals as anything else, but it's going to be really close. As you said, 6-4 doesn't go. It's 5-4, really, isn't it, if we rule Arsenal out 10 points back? But somebody's going to miss out, and at the moment it's Chelsea.
We've obviously been spoiled this season with 5 teams in the Champions League, so there's 5 teams who are kind of think that they belong there, and that probably won't, you know, we'll fight, 4 of them will definitely get in, but for one won't. So.
Or maybe one will win the
Arsenal could win the Europa League, but as we discussed, it seems unlikely.
Just to clarify, if one of the 5 English sides in the Champions League actually wins the thing, what does that mean for Champions League places next season?
They would get in, but then you would lose a place, I believe. They
so you would still only have 4. It's only the Europa League that would give you a 5th
side.
Yeah. Good to know. More top 4 talk after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, now on Alexa. Just ask Alexa to enable the Totally Football Show skill and listen to the podcast on your Amazon Dot or Echo.
Spurs are 2 points ahead of Chelsea. They had a 1-0 win over Palace. Harry Kane eventually bagging that winner, because it did look like kind of that ship had sailed. Worrying news for Spurs is the fact that, unless anybody wants to pitch anything about this game, do you?
I enjoyed Serge Aurier's 3 foul throws.
Very
rare to see that many foul throws.
It is, actually. I mean, one's quite rare, so...
You do actually see quite a lot in the Premier League. Linesmen never pull. It's almost like, you know, Sunday League, you will always get pulled up for it. But Premier League linesmen are like, it's, you know, they're probably just tired or something. But
I always remember my dad when I was a kid, actually, when we watched European football. And I'd say, oh, it's a foul throw. Not in Europe, son.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Jan Vertonghen, mystery over his ankle. They've got the game coming up with Juventus' second leg in, what, 8 days? This was the first time, I think, since 2015, Duncan, you'll know this, that neither of the two Belgian centre-backs was in the starting lineup.
It's been a long time, yeah. It was. It's also, I think, just looking from a Palace point of view, it's looking pretty... You know, they obviously had a resurgence when Hodgson took over, but they're looking pretty worrying now. I think, obviously, missing Zaha is a big loss.
Well, that's
lost
the thing.
They've lost 8 games he's missed.
All 10 I've got here. It might be in all competitions. Yeah. We'll go with yours. 8 that they've played without him. They've got 12 senior players out injured. They've got Man United next.
They've got Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool as 3 of their next 4, with Huddersfield, which is obviously a huge game for them, sandwiched in between that.
Wow. Yikes. Huddersfield, with Crystal Palace currently lying just goal difference above the bottom 3. Huddersfield getting a second straight win, actually. And their next 3 games, the Terriers, are all against sides below them, so they could really put a bit of distance between themselves. They went and beat West Brom at West Brom. West Brom got booed off by their fans. Stories today are that Pardew's got until the Watford game at the end of the week to save his job.
It used to be very rare. It used to be very rare that a football club in the Premier League would go through 3 managers in a season. But it now seems to be at least once a year that a team...
But who could they possibly bring in?
I don't know. Tony Pulis?
Well, he's kind of busy with Borough, who may well take West Brom's place.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting after the game. Pardew made reference to West Brom's very poor record. I think 3 wins out of whatever, which was quite a
7.
Yeah, clever move from him, because he's actually only won 7 of his last 52 games as a Premier League manager.
Well, that's right.
So he was actually using data to kind of shield himself. Yet his own data was far worse. So, yeah. And I think a lot of West Brom fans have seen through that.
Duncan, I bet that's not the only exciting stat you have about this game.
Well, it's just, you know, West Brom are not looking great, and obviously Craig Dawson is their main goal threat. He's the top scoring defender in the last few seasons in the Premier League. But when you're relying on Dawson as your kind of man to keep you up, probably not looking great.
Did you know that 4 of West Brom's last 6 goals have come from Chris Brunt corners?
Yeah.
That's so Pulis-esque, isn't it?
Mm.
Huddersfield-wise, I've got a point of mild interest about Rajiv van La Parra, who is the half-brother of Gini Wijnaldum, and his cousin is Royston Drenthe.
Is that right? Yeah. Where is Royston Drenthe these days?
Who knows? He's probably still playing somewhere, isn't he?
Partying, I imagine.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Allegedly.
Super. That bottom of the table situation has West Brom 7 points from safety. Stoke are 1 point of safety in penultimate spot. Then you've got Swansea just inside the bottom 3 on goal difference. Palace and Saints. Newcastle 2 points above the drop. Huddersfield and West Ham 3 above the drop. Brighton plus 4 and Bournemouth plus 5. Bournemouth, who came back to get a point at home to Newcastle after what looked like being an absolutely terrific away win for Rafa Benitez's side. They're at Liverpool next, aren't they? Mm. Newcastle, yeah. Ooh.
Bournemouth, right. Even with that late equaliser, Eddie Howe still wears the expression of a man who's just received some mildly disappointing news.
Well, I would say a point at home to Newcastle would fall into that category.
But they were 2-0 down. He always looks like he's, you know, his wife just said, sorry, Eddie, the babysitter's just cancelled, or, you know, we've just had a call from the garage and they can't get the part till Thursday.
Right.
Google image Eddie Howe, and that is his permanent expression.
Okay. Interesting window on your priorities there, Matt.
I was on my honeymoon, I was doing that.
Leicester had a 1-1 draw with Stoke, largely thanks to Jack Butland. Is that a fair summary?
Well, he made that error, which is pretty high profile, but then he did make a few good saves. I mean, that game was notable for me for making me feel old, because Kevin Campbell's son was trying to score past Peter Schmeichel's son.
Oh, yeah.
And life moves on. So, yeah. Mm. But, he, you know, obviously a lot's thought of Tyrese Campbell at Stoke.
He
looked a little bit overawed, I thought, but, you know, probably more dangerous than some of their options.
Absolutely. Always interesting when a player plays in the same position as his dad as well, isn't it? Because you think there's enough problems that you've got trying to live up to your father. So, you know, you've got that, both of those two, obviously, Kasper Schmeichel and Tyrese Campbell, following in their old man's footsteps.
Mm. Very true.
I thought Stoke were quite good, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stoke have had only 1 win in 9 matches now, Ian.
Yeah, going away to Leicester City, I think that's a good point. And actually, it could have quite easily been 3 points as well. I felt a bit sorry for Jack Butland, considering the match that he had, to make that sort of error. And actually, for me, I think when we get to the World Cup finals, I think Jack Butland is going to be the England number one.
Do you think so?
It just feels to me like...
Who else will he bring?
Pickford?
Joe Hart, probably still.
Do you think?
I think so. Whether he's included or not, based on his starts, I don't know, because he's not playing for West Ham at the moment. However, probably for his experience, as much as anything else, to sort of help Butland and Pickford through a major tournament, right. I sort of feel like that would be more beneficial to whoever is first choice than perhaps someone else.
All right. Will Gareth bring someone to kick people in training?
Yeah, quite possibly. That's a big test of Joe Hart's character if he's going to go as number three, isn't it? I think Southgate would have to make a really honest and brutal assessment of Hart's personality as whether he is. Think about how wound up he gets before games and things. Is he going to be all right? Being, you know, he's not even the sub goalie essentially, is if he's the number three.
Well, it's only 8 years since the World Cup where he was, you know, clearly the best keeper there and didn't get a game because he wasn't experienced enough. And, you know, the last World Cup obviously only played two matches. Life comes at you fast.
Wow. Rob Green, of course, who had the starting
Yeah, season. And then David James came in.
Yeah.
Around that subject, he has taken a lot of setbacks, hasn't he? You know, starting with Pep arriving at City and deciding that he wasn't the number one, then getting moved out to Torino, it didn't go perfectly for him there. The fact that he was in Italy probably helped because it escaped sort of some people's conscience in this country. People who took notice certainly noted that it wasn't his best year. As a goalkeeper in top flight football in Europe. And then he's obviously gone to West Ham and lost his place there as well. So he has taken a lot of setbacks. He's a character who's had to deal with quite a lot in the last sort of 2 years or so.
Do you like him, Ian? You spent a bit of time with him in Manchester?
Yeah, I've interviewed him quite a few times. Yeah, I think I do like him, actually. I think as well that I felt a little bit sorry for him with how it went at City. But you sort of look at Edison now and you see the vision of what Pep was thinking, and you just can't argue with that, really, can you?
Indeed you can't. Burnley drew with Saints 1-1. Bobby Bandley controversy. I don't know that it's Bobby's fault exactly. I mean, why run into the referee who stood stock still at the time? In other Premier League news, Brighton beat Swansea 4-1.
I was mildly pleased with that after Carvajal's comments about stats last week.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
How did that go down at Opta Towers?
Well, basically, it didn't really make sense what he said. And also, I was worried about the prospect of taking a chicken on a picnic from a bone disposal point of view, mainly.
Really?
But, yeah. Just seems a lot of hassle.
It's all very biodegradable, chicken bones.
Yeah, you've got to be careful, though. Dogs chew chicken bones. Can be fatal for them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm really intrigued about the angry statistician sat in the office seeing his comments and going, right, what can we dig up on Swansea this weekend?
So, Carlos suggested that stats were worthless because if he went on a picnic with you and he ate the chicken and
he
you
ate the
didn't,
entire chicken,
that you the, statistically had both
the data
eaten half
would
a
say
chicken.
The 50% of the chicken had been eaten by me, but I don't think it works like that.
I wouldn't have reflected the reality of it. No. Okay, so what have you dug up on Swansea's defeat?
Well, they lost 4-1 to Brighton.
Well, that's all you need.
I mean, from a statistical point of view, interesting. Lewis Dunk with his fourth own goal of the season,
right,
which is equals the Premier League record, Martin Skrtel in 2013-14. So he's got 10 games to break the record, which I think he can do.
Okay. Excellent.
I found interesting about this game and have in recent weeks. Glenn Murray's got 5 goals in 5 games since he was arrested on suspicion of tax fraud. It hasn't affected him. It makes me think of the Lee Bowyer Woodgate thing when Lee Bowyer was playing really well throughout that.
I'm going to say it was a different charge at Lee.
Of course, it was a different charge, but it's something that serious hanging over your head might affect your performance at work. Well, £1 million tax fraud? Fairly serious, isn't it?
I mean, it is. Sorry, Matt, you're absolutely right. Brighton, who have a terrific record at the Amex, have got Arsenal there on Saturday. Arsenal, who will have been in action late on Thursday against Man City. Is that going to be the next chapter in the Gunners' decline and fall?
It certainly could be, couldn't it? You can see it not going well against City again, and then you go into that Brighton game with a lot of pressure on. But I was surprised at Brighton and Swansea, actually, because Swansea, well, I think I'm right in saying, were the form side in the league aside from Tottenham going into the weekend. I did not see that coming at all. But you know, you look at results at this stage of the season, between teams who are battling against relegation, and you sort of look at the Huddersfield result and you look at the Brighton result, and it makes me wonder just how important those results could be come the end of the season, because I think they could be pretty crucial.
And on Swansea, on that point, they've got West Ham, Huddersfield and Southampton as their next three.
Oh,
so we'll find out a bit more.
Of course, Swansea also have Sheffield Wednesday in a cup replay on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Spurs will be hosting Rochdale.
Sheffield Wednesday obviously reeling after the weekend loss to Villa. There were 17 fouls in that match. 16 of them conceded by Sheffield Wednesday. One by Aston Villa. I think a lot of Wednesday fans were irate.
Sorry, say that again.
So there were 17 fouls in the game.
Yeah.
16 of them conceded by Wednesday. One by Villa, which is a pretty big gap.
Terry plays for Villa.
Yeah.
One foul for Villa.
And was it like a last minute foul from Villa just to get one on the board sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it was quite late on. I think the ref was Swarbrick, who then a day later was the VAR man at Wembley. So maybe he was thinking about video rather than fouls.
Nice one, Duncan. What else did you dig up in your trawl through the stats? Did you find anything about Watford Everton? One shot on target. They went to Dubai. They went all the way to Dubai. They came back. They still only had one shot on target, Everton.
Yeah, I think they had two, didn't they?
So they have two shots on target. Mm.
But yeah, no, Everton, they're away. I think they've won one of their last 22 away games. And Allardyce seems to have kind of, you know, turned them into a very defensive team, as he might do. But they, you know, they just didn't look like scoring, really. Jordan Pickford did have the first shot by a goalkeeper, though, this season.
Did he?
Yeah.
Troy Deeney scored the first goal that he's managed from open play this season.
Mm.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, penalty man generally. But, Pickford, maybe that, you know, should get him a place in the World Cup team if he's having shots. But yeah, he's actually had 1% of Everton shots under Allardyce.
What's he like at taking penalties?
Probably quite good. I always think goals would be quite good. If you take a penalty, like a goal kick,
just
essentially.
Smash it.
Top corner.
Yeah. I had some interesting advice about taking penalties from a specialist on Friday, one Beppe Signori. He took a penalty against me and surprisingly beat me, and I'll be revealing what he said to me in Wednesday's Golazzo show, Ian.
Nice.
Now, there's one other game which we haven't addressed yet. It was a terrific performance from Liverpool as they defeated West Ham once again. We'll talk about that very shortly. But just to close off this bit, Everton, we're in the UAE. Royston Drinta, that's where he finished his career, and he used to play for Everton.
Yes.
And he retired, actually, we were just wondering. So the latest is he's retired last summer to concentrate on his rapping career.
Of course he has.
What rapping career, you're asking, Matt? This rapping career. You listen to solo, two faces combo. Broeja binnen vallen, druk te maken met my papa. Harry blijven schoppen met die pokus, geen balie man. Meningen verschillen, moet ze rammen net als jaap. Staan mijn pokus, wil ik lang en pijn. Pat Nevin was in the hot seat last week. Matt, you've got a good story about Pat and pizza, is that right?
Yes, I'm sure he won't mind me telling this. Yeah,
all right,
a good story might be stretching it a bit, but it's a story.
All right.
So Pat is my co-commentator for Champions League games, or for a lot of games on Chelsea TV, which is great. It's a great learning experience for me because he knows everything about football. But it's also great because at half time he has a pizza delivered from Frankie's restaurant, which is in Stamford Bridge, and gets a runner to bring it up to the stand, and he shares it out at half time.
Pizza does Pat have?
He pretty much always goes for pepperoni, in fairness, right, which I was slightly surprised by. I wouldn't have been surprised if he was a vegetarian, quattro formaggio kind of guy. But no, he likes a bit of meat and a bit of spice. And we shared a slice at halftime in the Barcelona game last week. And it was very pleasant. He's a generous man, but he does love
pizza.
Don't
tell Morrissey.
No, quite.
That's so true. Pat's got a story about Morrissey, hasn't he?
He has
which we're going to be revealing in our special Dublin Live show, tickets for which, the handful that are still remaining, are available at ticketmaster.ie. Monday the 19th of March is the evening that Julian, James and myself and Pat will be just, you know, talking football with our friends in Dublin.
Plus Guinness.
By the way, if you're a fan of quizzes, Duncan... Facebook.com/thetotallyfootballshow at 12:30 GMT on Friday is totally the place you need to be for the Totally Football quiz. Anyone can enter, anyone but you, Duncan, because you of Opta are doing the questions.
I need to think of them in my mind shortly.
Okay. All right, nice one. Because it's tricky, isn't it? Because they have to be questions that people can't Google.
Yeah, there's been reports of a little bit of, you know, nefarious activity. So okay. I'm going to make them even harder.
Wow. Yeah? So it's yeah. one or two rotten apples spoiling it for everybody.
I know. Sad.
Anyway, what prizes are on offer? Frankly, I don't know. But I should do by Thursday. So that's nice. Liverpool, once again, they put four past West Ham.
They're quite good, aren't they?
Liverpool.
Mm.
At the front and at the back, increasingly.
Quite, yeah. I really like Klopp's quote on Trent Alexander-Arnold after this game. He's a little bit of a street kid. If you see his crosses, they're a little bit dirty.
Dirty crosses.
Mm. Not something we track, but I think dirty crosses should be this the new metric. Let's go for it.
I was really interested in Klopp after the game, actually. Going on the attack a little bit with his players.
Mm-hmm.
It was, the quotes were surprising in some ways, but then I sort of understood where he was coming from. Basically, he was sort of saying, when they have team meetings and when they get together and have a meal and stuff, at the start of the season, everyone's very quiet, quite subdued, you know, with what's coming. And he said sort of in recent weeks, when one game, you win two games, three games, people get relaxed, they're more jokey and things like that. And he was sort of saying he wanted the players to stay angry, wanted to ensure that that intensity in the play and the aggression in the play stayed there in order for them to be able to finish where he believes they should do, which, to be fair, they've got a good chance now of finishing second, haven't they?
Well, they're going to be facing United, who are ahead of them, very soon.
Yeah, a couple of weeks next.
Are they the second best team in the Premier League?
Not according to the table, no, they're the third best team at the moment. Whether that changes between now and the end of the... Sorry for being smart. Whether that changes from now to the end of the season, I think there is a chance, and a lot will depend on that game at Old Trafford as well. But I have to say, I know we've talked about Manchester United, but Mourinho was not frightened at all to build that match up against Chelsea. He was not frightened at all to say that it was the start of a really important period for Manchester United, specifically at Old Trafford as well, with that game against Liverpool coming, also the FA Cup quarter final to come there as well, the second leg of the Champions League last 16 tie against Sevilla as well. And really, for United, they'd not been in a great moment. Things had not been going well. They'd lost a few matches. There was obviously all the arguments between Mourinho and Pogba that was being played out across the newspapers as well. And that really did feel like a quite important victory for United heading into that Liverpool game specifically.
Mm. Jonathan Clifford says, can we have some proper love for Firmino, back to Liverpool now, and his no-look finishes today, please? What percentage, Duncan?
14% of his goals this season have been no look, which is good. I mean, it made me wonder what sort of other professions you could bring in no look stuff into. I mean, air traffic control.
Yeah.
Do you define no look as not looking at the goal or not looking at the ball?
Well, not at the goal, surely, I guess. I mean, it's a bit of a strange technique. It's becoming more deliberate as it goes on. Mm. This one was very much like, oh, look, I'm going to do no look. But, you know, it's...
Can I just ask, at what point does it get actually quite annoying?
Yeah, well, it's the sort of thing that would rile your dad, I would say.
Right, you know? I am your dad.
He needs to move it on now because, like you say, 14%. So perhaps he could actually run to the goal line, stop it, get on his hands and knees and just slowly just roll the ball over the line with his head.
I saw Nathan Tyson do that in a game once.
Someone actually done that?
Yeah, he lobbed the ball over the goalkeeper for Wickham against Bury, I think. So he was basically running on goal with no one there. He stopped and then slid and headed it in. And I think Wickham's manager at the time was John Gorman, and he berated him for being unprofessional and disrespectful.
Gianluca Vialli, I mean, this is a long time ago, in a massively rain-drenched game at Sampdoria, put the ball in sliding with his head when he basically went down and the pitch was so rain-sodden that he just slid and the ball was in front of him and he managed to kind of just flick it in with his head as he went by.
Tyson and Vialli, what an exclusive club that would be to join.
Absolutely. Okay,
but
anyway,
I think it's good. I think, you know, remember Balotelli's one screwing with his shoulder at home. You know, these sort of goals do live on in the memory. And in a fairly mundane, routine 4-1 home win, you know, people will remember that game now because of that.
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was really good in that game as well, wasn't he? Got a chance to play
in centre
midfield. I wonder if that might be his route into the England team in the World Cup as well. If he gets the chance to keep playing there between now and the end of the season, obviously that was why he signed.
He's been pretty good for England over the last couple of years, actually. And, you know, obviously playing well at club level is going to help.
Do you know what? Have we ever been this close to a major tournament and been unable to name the majority of the starting 11 for England?
That's a good point. And is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a good point as well. I sort of feel like maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah, because feels that way, no?
Yeah, because, you know, normally when we're at this stage, we can probably name 9 or 10 of the 11 almost. And it's not worked for us in the past, has it? You know, we've not had successful tournaments at all. So perhaps it's going to be a good thing.
But listeners may be trying to perform this exercise in their minds right now. So we've got Harry Kane up front.
Oh, OK. The that's confirmed one. Ones.
Yeah. Harry Kane, Raheem Sterling, John Stones.
Is that it?
Maybe Kyle Walker.
Do you think John Stones is nailed on?
Well, maybe not.
Yeah, I think Kyle Walker is. I think Kyle Walker is.
Any others that you would say, no question, starting 11 right now?
You would have said Lallana, but you know, a year ago. But yeah, his
an injury. Also. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you'd have said Jordan Henderson maybe as well, but no. Gary Cahill in the past maybe. Chris Smalling in the past maybe. I just think that you probably are only able to name maybe two or three people who you're pretty sure. And this is before anyone suffers a last-minute horrendous injury and we all have to touch the screen to heal them and all those sort of things. You know?
That's the benefit of what you're talking about, isn't it? I mean, Harry Kane is obviously the player that England can least afford to lose, but a lot of the other players are interchangeable with players of similar quality, which is not a position that England
often find
themselves.
That's where the whole worrying about Beckham's injury or Rooney's injury came from. It was like, we need these players. Yeah. Yeah,
Gareth Barry, you know, we had to put him in a cryogenic tent before 2010, didn't we? And
the one thing, actually, that probably is more of a concern for England,
although possibly that explains his longevity as a player.
The one thing for me that's probably more concerning for England is the fact that I'm not 100% sure. Maybe it's not, actually. I'm undoing my own point as I'm saying it. But I don't really know what system they're going to play either, for certain.
They don't either, so that's fine.
Well, yeah, but I'm pretty sure that it'll be a variation of 4-3-3, but perhaps that's good as well. Perhaps actually being interchangeable against different opposition will work as well.
Southgate's quite keen. He's quite clean, but he's also quite keen on playing a back three, I think, as well.
Yeah.
That's all sorted then. Very few confirmed players and no idea about the system, it all adds up to another successful summer. Brilliant.
No, but it actually might do.
But you never know.
Because it's so different.
Exactly.
And Southgate as well, I've been quite impressed in a way about just how he's gone about trying to explore different ideas.
He's a nice man, isn't he?
Ideas. Yeah, he's been a pundit in the past on Premier League TV. You probably have worked with him. Mm-hmm. I remember him being with us up at Anfield, this is quite a few years ago, when he was between managerial jobs. He may have even been getting his coaching badges at the time, I'm not sure. But he was a really nice fella, very, very knowledgeable about the game, as you'd expect.
Do you know where he gets his knowledge from?
Go on.
Modesty prevents me from answering. I don't know if he listens to this one, but he certainly used to listen to another one.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway,
so perhaps you could name the England starting 11.
No, probably he's driving along in the back of. He's probably sat in the back of some FA limo right now, jotting down those names as we said them.
Yeah,
hey Gareth.
The certainty in which John Stones was said initially, perhaps that will convince him now that Stones should start the first match of the World Cup.
Perhaps.
Listeners, starting up the Totally Football Show was a hairy business. Fortunately, Cornerstone have been with us every step of the way. Why? Because they're in the business of making hairy things smooth, like your face. Cornerstone's award-winning blades will give you the smoothest shave possible. And their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally to see the range for yourself, get £10 off your first order and have it delivered right to your door. And you'll find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
I was going to ask you all what was the best game you saw this weekend. Ian, you've already said, I think, the Man United-Chelsea performance. Is that right?
It was the only game I was at, but in terms of like talking points and an actual incident and it being important, that was the best game I've seen.
Okay, Matt, what was yours?
QPR 2, Nottingham Forest 5, which I attended as a Forest supporter with very low expectations. I'd even taken the step of tweeting the FSF the day before, saying 20's plenty campaign. Obviously, in the Premier League, I paid £33 for my ticket to watch two teams in the bottom half of the Championship. And I even included a pithy, what kind of entertainment am I going to get from this game? Well, 7 goals worth of entertainment. So
as a Forest fan, they were scored by the right team.
They really were. It was we hadn't scored in I think 8 of our previous 10 matches at all. Yes, and we got 5 in one game, which was bizarre.
That's crazy.
But lovely.
All right, well, there'll be a lot of Championship talk in our excellent Totally Football League show coming up on Tuesday, which I imagine might feature a reference to Ryan Sessegnon. Lino Rossignol was bigging him up last week. And he went and he scored his 13th of the season, did Ryan, as Fulham bagged their 8th win in a row at Craven Cottage, beating Wolves. Loads of goals elsewhere in the Championship. Sunderland had a 3-3 draw with Tony Pulis' Borough. That's a surprise, isn't it?
And Callum McManaman, that was quite funny. Scored the equaliser for Sunderland for 3-3. Didn't play much under Tony Pulis, now Borough manager at West Brom, and ran past him and I think they call it, gave it the big one.
Did he?
Of his celebration, in front of Mr. Pulis.
His response after the game cracked me up as well, I have to say. He said, the lad's got the hump. I don't know if that was the exact phrase, but it was along these lines. The lad's got the hump because he didn't play for me much at West Brom. So I sent him on loan to Sheffield Wednesday. He didn't play much there. And he's not played much here, so I can understand his celebration.
He's another nice man, Tony Pulis, isn't he? Very personable.
I don't say I don't know much about him other than sort of dealing with him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Excellent knowledge of the Crimean War as well.
Does he have good knowledge of the Crimean War?
I think when he left, was it Palace? One of the clubs, when he left, he went on a tour of the Crimea because he was interested and, to glean some more knowledge.
So. Okay.
Does lots of stuff for charity as well, doesn't he, Tony Pulis? I think he's an all-round good egg.
Oh, there you go.
The one thing that really perplexes me about him, he will not sit down for press conferences.
I love that. You guys are not my priority. I have somewhere else to be. I am not sitting down. Even when he's like unveiled as manager of a club, he won't do it. And the cap's always on.
Someone told me when he was at Stoke that it was about the time it takes. And does it really take that much more time to sit down or stand up? I've not really been aware of.
I've not done studies into it myself.
It's to encourage brevity, isn't it? Like I'm not here for long.
Yes.
So
yeah. It sends a message. What was the most exciting game you saw, or the best game you saw this week?
Well, the League Cup final.
It was.
And it reminded me actually. I don't think I saw the point made this year, but it is regularly made that obviously the League Cup final, the supporters split 50-50, and the atmosphere was really good for a point for a time, and it was Fair play to the city.
Mm. It was split 50-50 and then 50% just split. Basically.
Yeah.
Alrighty. It's a big continent of football, Ian Irving. Where do you want to start?
Neymar's ankle. Right ankle? Right ankle.
One of Neymar's ankles is missing.
Yes.
Yeah.
What a blow that is.
Just 8 days before the return leg with Real Madrid.
Mm.
Well, now the line from PSG and from Unai Emery was, we're just going to let it settle overnight and then have a look today. I haven't seen what Monday has brought in terms of ankle news.
Nor I yet, but similar to we were saying with Guardiola, with Fernandinho, undoubtedly the biggest.
I'm hearing better than first feared.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Still, not great.
Well, it's 8 days away, isn't it? So it's going to still take some recovery to be not only fit, but fit and firing of sorts for that game. Perhaps he won't play between now and then as well, but,
Well, it's only French football.
Well, and they're in a strong
quarter final on Wednesday, against Marseille part two. I'm commentating on that match.
Are you? For Nigerian TV?
For PSG TV, the English version, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, but you would imagine that's a nice one for him to be able to sit out. And in fact,
so you're all over the PSG angle.
Well, to an extent, yeah. In as much as I haven't quite finished my research for that game yet. But I can tell you that I don't think Neymar will be playing in that game. And given that it's Real Madrid, maybe they will make several changes, but they've certainly got the squad to do that and still beat Marseille anyway.
Right. They had a 3-0 win. You probably saw as part of your research.
Yes, I did. Yeah, lovely goal from Cavani for 3-0. But it's difficult, isn't it? Because it just seems too easy for them. They've outgrown Ligue 1 almost. So you wonder how they can make that next step when they were so, and the game between Real Madrid and PSG I thought was a strangely low quality football match. So if they manage to get past Madrid in the second leg, are they going to be able to deal with a Manchester City or a Barcelona?
We shall see.
I was a bit disappointed with Barcelona at Chelsea as well, actually, from that perspective. It's a little unfair, but every time I watch Barcelona, I constantly compare them to the Pep incarnation between, 2007, 2011, something like that. And I'm always disappointed, so perhaps I should stop comparing them to that team and just accept what they are
just
now.
Just accept them for what they are. Yeah.
Did anyone see Suarez trying to get a booking?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
That was amazing.
I didn't see that. How did that...
He basically wanted a yellow card, so he was suspended for the next game and would be back for a bigger game.
Atletico, he wanted to be available for, supposedly, yeah.
And he basically spent the second half fouling, time-wasting. He took about 2 minutes on a throw, and the ref basically knew what he was up to and was refusing to book him, and it was...
Probably it's an interesting twist, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did he never resort to his sort of trump card?
He didn't pull out the big gums.
No, OK. He did get a hat-trick, though, didn't he, as Barcelona beat Girona 6-1. Messi got a brace, and the other was a Coutinho screamer. Real Madrid beat Alaves 4-0. Ronaldo was on a hat-trick, but still let Benzema take and score a penalty. Have that, haters.
Yeah, Gareth Bale scored as well in that game, didn't he?
He did, didn't he? Mm. Oh, do you remember Yannick Carrasco?
He's off to China, isn't
he's
he?
He's off to China. This is a player who was going to go to one of the European greats for untold riches, one of the brightest prospects of his generation.
Mm.
He has just signed for Dalian Yifang.
I'll trust you, yeah.
He'll earn $9 million a season. He's 24. They've also just signed Jose Fonte from West Ham. How is this all possible? Because the Chinese transfer window shuts this Wednesday night.
Carrasco may be looking at Paulinho and thinking, well, I'll go for a couple of years, take the money, and then I can get a move to a decent side, and I'm much richer than I would have been, and or still 26 or whatever.
He might be looking at Tevez and fancy a trip to Disneyland.
Yeah, quite, yeah.
Mm. Oscar's still out there, though, isn't he?
Oscar's still out there, yeah.
It's interesting, last week, as part of a group interviewing Wayne Rooney, and he actually sort of said he could have gone to China for a lot of money and chose not to do that and to stay at Everton, even though he knew that he was under more pressure, even though he knew that it was perhaps not the easier choice of the two. And considering what he's done in his career, comparing it to, you know, a 24-year-old who's still got quite a lot to prove, I thought it was quite interesting that's how he saw it, because I suppose a lot of people would have forgiven him for just flying over to the other side of the world and being paid a lot of money just under no pressure, but actually going back to Everton and trying to prove a point, which he sort of quoted as doing.
I think a lot of people have warmed to Wayne Rooney because of this season.
But that wasn't the most interesting point of the interview for me.
On, right?
The most interesting point of the interview...
Thank goodness, listeners. Listen.
Yeah. was that his son, Kai, gives him... a quite extensive review of each of his performances after he's played.
How old is Kai now?
Good question. About 9, 8 or 9, is that right?
I mean, you'd probably welcome that as a dad, though, that level of interest from...
Yeah, well, Rooney was sort of talking about how he's going to go about managing him is probably the wrong phrase, but how he's going to go about supporting him and sort of being there to give advice and support Kai's choice if he does want to sort of have the ambition of being a footballer. I mean, they were sat at Old Trafford together yesterday as well, watching the United and Chelsea game, and sort of camera caught them a few times. You can just see sort of Rooney explaining, Wayne explaining things to his son. It's quite nice, that, isn't it?
Was your son, Duncan, performing a similar operation, perhaps while you were watching the League Cup final?
He did. I did tell him that. He said, "Why was everyone angry with Arsene Wenger?" And I said, "Because lots of people don't think he should be Arsenal manager." He suggested me as a replacement.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's awfully sweet. How old is your son?
He's 8. So,
okay. Yeah. All right. But in terms of your stats performance, I have to say you've come out with very few stats in today's show.
Really?
Yeah, you're below your X stat, if I may.
It's quality, not quantity.
Have you saved up something special for the end?
No.
Because it's heading towards... Never mind. But you've given us so much more than just numbers.
Exactly.
And that's, for me, that's more special. In other Spanish news, because we were talking about Spain, Atletico Madrid hammered Sevilla 5-2 at the Sanchez-Pizjuan.
I miss Diego Costa. Lovely, lovely, warm man. I once watched him post-match at Chelsea. They always have a couple of kids in the tunnel, you know, maybe down on their luck or not very well or whatever. He get to meet the players. And one occasion, it would have been last season, the father of said children was trying to take a photo of Diego Costa with his kids and couldn't get the camera to work. Something was wrong with it. He showed it to his wife. She couldn't get it to work. So Costa obviously doesn't speak any English, picked up the camera. We thought, oh no, what's going to happen here? He batted off a couple of club officials who were trying to say, oh, that's quite an expensive camera, Diego. Played with it for about 3 minutes, took a picture of himself, said it worked. They lined up, took the picture. He gave everybody high fives, walked off. And the dad of the child and the rest of us were speechless. Like, that was properly broken and he's just fixed the camera.
Diego Costa snaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a very, very real sense.
He could have a career at Jessop's once he finishes playing football with those sort of skills.
Something to bear in mind.
That could develop.
All right.
Oh, yes.
Oh!
No negative to that joke. It was just terrific.
Snappy.
In happier news from Scotland, the reserve keeper of Queen of the South, Sam Henderson, who you recall was out of their match at the weekend. We thought, after being hit by a runaway cow, actually recovered and took his place on the bench. That's great news. In Germany, Bayern Munich had won 14 games in a row, but then they played Hertha Berlin, who for the second time this season halted them in their tracks. 0-0. 20 points their lead at the top of the Bundesliga. In Italy, Juve's game was snowed off at the weekend, which means that Napoli this evening could go 4 points clear if they can get Boscaleri away, which is not an easy game. We'll be doing our usual roundup on Wednesday's show, but Milan, I have to say, second half away at Roma. It was their first win at Roma since 2011, but it was far and away the best Milan performance I've seen.
Who was the chap who scored that second goal? He was a defender. Calabria. Lovely little dinked finish.
Yeah, Davide Calabria. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, fantastic.
And the first goal from Patrick Cutrone was pretty good as well. It was almost like a Bettiger-esque kind of side foot in. Something, but just the way that...
Huh? Sorry, James. I was going to say, something quite warming about Milan getting back to former glories.
We've had
Especially with Gattuso in charge.
Yeah. Which is, I think, a total surprise to everybody. But there's no question they are very much back at the moment. I don't know if it's going to last, if Arsenal will put them back in their place. But 12 games unbeaten in all competitions, 5 wins in a row.
Clean sheets in all of those wins as well.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Mm. Well, they're not. As we said a little bit last week on Golazzo, when you've got Romagnoli and Bonucci as your centre-halves, that's what you would expect from them. And Donnarumma.
Yeah, goalie's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Anyway, well, it's going to be interesting. When is the Europa League tie with Arsenal? When is that happening? In a couple of weeks?
Next week, I think.
Is it next week?
They have to fit in so many in the Europa League, yeah.
They have to fit it in by the time the last 16 second legs are finished in the Champions League, so 2 legs.
Right.
So then they catch up then, and then the quarterfinals are synced.
All right then. Milan, anyway, the question now in Monday's papers is about whether they can get back into the Champions League via the league. They are 7 points off fourth spot on Inter, but they're going to be facing Inter next week in the derby, which is going to be huge. And that is the football for today. Let's finish off then by getting the odds from Paddy Power with Ian McIntosh.
Thanks, James. I'm here with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, how was your weekend?
It was very good, thank you. How was yours?
Magnificent. Let's have a look at the odds. West Bromwich Albion, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse for the Baggies. Is Pardew even going to make the end of the season?
Pardew, no, he's not going to last the season, we don't think. He's got a bag and a half packed already, he says. I reckon he's to finish the job with the packing, as he's clearly not going to finish the job at the Hawthorns. He's 4-9, that's odds on, that he's the next Premier League man just sacked. And despite only being there for about a third of the season, it's really hard to argue with that. But he has delivered more excitement than Pulis. One word for you, Taxigate. For him to be manager at the start of next season, it's a 5-1 shot, which is just a 17% chance. Ouch.
Good Lord. Is there any interest in him actually pulling this off, making the great escape and surviving?
I can tell you that in the last 6 weeks, I've had 0 bets on that. So, in one word, no.
Okay, well, let's look to something happier. Rochdale, who did lose this weekend, and they didn't score in the process. But what are the odds on them scoring at Wembley in their FA Cup replay with Spurs?
Yeah, given that they're bottom of League One by some distance, they're obviously the nap of the day to beat Spurs. Great that they've got the replay. Very exciting. We're 12-1. They score a single goal at Wembley. Which would be nice for them. 25-1 to pull off a mammoth upset. I think they've done their bit, though, with the draw.
I'll tell you what I could see happening, though, and that's Liverpool finishing second in the Premier League, possibly even while scoring more than Manchester City. What can you get on that?
Yeah, I'm half with you there. I don't tell Guardiola, but I think Liverpool are definitely the most entertaining team to watch in the Premier League. And I think tipping them to finish second, given that they're only 2 points behind and imploding Man United, is a good shout. I just can't see him scoring more than City. I think City have got something like 79 goals already this season, which is 14 more than Jurgen Klopp's side. So we'll quote you a generous 16-1 for that bet, but I would suggest there's more fun to be had with Chelsea and United. Novelty bets.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. It's 18 plus only, begambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. And Ian Irving, it's many thanks to you today. You're heading off to do Fan Zone.
Yes.
On the Premier League TV worldwide.
I'm sure on the agenda will be many of the things we've talked about today. Unhappy Arsenal fans being top of that list.
Yeah, right. And of course, later on in the week, we'll be talking about fantasy football, in which you are where in the world?
Currently just outside the top 2,000.
With your fantasy team?
Yeah.
Out of how many managers worldwide?
Is it nearly 6 million now, something like
that? Certainly over 5.
Yeah. I've never been in this position before.
What's the secret of your success this year?
That is a question, isn't it?
There's not been one move. You didn't get on anyone early, did you?
Yeah, I've done that a few times. Getting on Firmino early was a good move just before Christmas, but I don't know, really. And there's still time for it all to fall apart as well, because this is a real key part of the season with all the chips involved and stuff as well.
The chips, the double game weeks.
Blank game weeks.
The blank game weeks.
Yeah.
Et cetera. If you like that kind of thing, and most of you are going, no, but if you do, Fantasy Premier League Show is the place to find out more. Duncan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, I'm off to apply for the Arsenal manager's job.
Bingo! Lovely. Well, enjoy that.
I'll get handed out within a week.
I'm not sure that you will. Not sure that you will. Matt, you're off to do something very exciting.
Yes. I've actually got quite a random week of football around the world. So I've got Coupe de France quarterfinal on Wednesday, PSG Marseille. Then I'm dipping into the Algarve Cup, which is a women's football tournament being contested by 12 teams. We're doing Portugal v China. And the CONCACAF Champions League has reached the round of 16 stage. As you'll know, I'll be doing the second leg of Seattle Sounders versus Sant Tecla of El Salvador, who hold a 2-1 lead from the first leg.
I'm intrigued. How much of your week will be practicing pronunciations?
The vast majority. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. That does sound good, actually. That does sound good. We must get your views on all of that when you're next in.
Absolutely.
We'll be back on Thursday. Of course, Ian's along tomorrow with Totally Football League Show. Galetta's on Wednesday. Have a great time in the meanwhile, listeners. We'll speak to you soon.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.